Blog Talk Radio.
Blessed souls, we all learn the hard way, but hopefully to make it a brighter day, we're tuning in right now into Soul Class 363, Secular by Design, Part 8, because we're alive due to the fact we want to stay alive in Torah Chaim, instructions of life, Torah Chesed, instructions of kindness, Torah Rachamim, instructions of mercies. We're now broadcasting live from Turtle Island, a.k.a. the USA, unifying souls actually. Our plans today in our continuing series are to read, starting at page 25 from Alan W. Cecil's seminal work, Secular by Design, A Philosophy of Noahide Laws and Observances, which you can obtain for your own sense of coming closer to your divine image and blessings that are involved with accessing your divine image by reading this wonderful book by going to Amazon.com. Now, some questions to be asked to arouse your interest, blessed souls, are as follows. What shall become the common property of all humanity? What shall eventually become a part and parcel of everyday life for human beings? What do Western intellectuals possess concerning the Torah? To understand one's obligations to Creator and human beings, what does one need to know? Meanwhile, before we even start the show, may the Most High Creator bless you and your loved ones peacefully and pleasantly. And we're going to ask Mechila forgiveness from Blessed Brother in Spirit and Prayer and all different types of positive meditation, Rev. Isaac Patton, who we're featuring a remake of his classic song, Listen Mother. And by the way, Blessed Souls, that was a pretty quick exit. Sorry, Rev. Isaac. Rev. Isaac is also the president of the Beit Mazal, which was named after his blessed mother, Mazal Biton, who passed away a couple years ago, to the next level of life. And this prayer congregation, I hope to be praying at this coming Shabbat, if you're in the Brooklyn area. It's located at 1433 President Street between Kingston and Albany Avenue for all you Brooklynites. And hopefully myself and my young son, Yosef Yitzhak Goodman, will be there. And you'll see not only if you enjoy this music when it's recorded, when you hear him sing live with the fellow congregants, you feel alive with the spirit of Moroccan Jewish or Jewish Moroccan, North African, Israeli, French music combined with a little spice of modern rock and roll, believe it or not. And joining me to add to the spice of today's program is, in fact, celebrated author, at least in my mind and in the minds of more and more Jews who I am having the privilege and the great merit of sharing his book, Alan W. Cecil, and for instance, this book is being highly commended by Professor Ross Barnard of Queensland University, which is biotech, and also my landlord, Mr. Brooke Zibel, who is a mathematician, who told me this is, and I don't mean to embarrass Mr. Cecil, this is the greatest book ever written by a Gentile. So that being said, to throw some good vibes now down to Southern Florida, we have live on the line Alan Cecil. Good morning, sir.
Good morning, Alan. How are you today?
Baruch Hashem, thank God. And Alan, I just want to go back to last week's program because we were trading around some reasonings, and you mentioned quite analytically that many Christians, and again, we're not here to insult any Christians or Islamic people or people of any faith, but rather to point out why we of the Jewish and Noahic community do not accept other faiths, because we have one, or we have instruction, we have laws to follow. And Alan had mentioned that the reason why it is not tenable for Jews and Noahites to accept, for instance, Jesus as the Messiah, if it's based on the idea, the axiomatic teaching, that he was a sacrifice, when in fact he did not qualify for being a sacrifice, because we're talking about only certain types of animals which are considered kosher. And I mentioned how, well, I never met a Jew who chewed his cud, and Alan mentioned, I believe, that he has met some, I forgot what he mentioned, either or Christian or Gentiles who had hoofed feet. So I chuckled for a moment, and I realized we're not here to insult people, but rather, when we're dealing at this level of trying to go deep in teachings, there is room for humor. And in fact, I want to share some good Jewish humor about how Jews, when they get involved in their earthly desires, how they also can be likened to a vegetative matter and animal matter. So I'll tell two quick stories, and then we'll get some feedback from Alan on what I've just shared. Now, story number one, the Baal Shem Tov, Rabbi Yisrael Baal Shem Tov, who is the modern patriarch of the Hasidic movement from the 18th century, once gathered his Hasidim. And I believe he actually, if I recall the story in its pristine form, he took his Hasidim for a walk on a Friday night, and one of his Hasidim was absent, and he was sitting in his house, and the Baal Shem Tov led his Hasidim to the window where this Chassid of his was, in fact, enjoying his Shabbat meal. And he happened to be eating some ox meat. Now, he showed to the students, his devotees, that he was dressed in his long black Shabbos coat, and he was wearing a fur hat, which is known as a strimal, and he was eating the food with a fork and a knife. But the head of this chassid was the head of an ox, and the Baal Shem Tov was explaining to him that he was more involved in trying to fulfill his desire to eat meat than to truly honor the Shabbat. Now, in fact, we do honor the Shabbat, the Sabbath, with fine foods and dainties. However, this person got a little confused at that point of his level of consciousness, that he became more involved in just wanting to eat meat than actually celebrating the fact that he's supposed to eat good food on Shabbos. The second story is by the fourth Lubavitch Rebbe, Rabbi Shmuel Schneerson of Lubavitch, also known as the Rebbe Marash. He had a chassid who had prayed the morning prayer in the same quorum as the Rebbe Marash, and afterwards the Rebbe walked up to him and whispered in his ears something. So this was a very unusual type of conduct, and the Hasidim were very curious. What would the Rebbe have done or said to him to have gone up to him and whispered something here and just walk away? And Hasid responded, well, the Rebbe Maharaj told me I was a kugel. Now, a kugel, blessed souls, is a type of potato pastry. I don't know otherwise how to describe it. It's basically you take a sweet potato or mashed potato, mash it up and add pepper and different types of spices, and it can be cooked, it can be fried, basically. And it's a nice food. It's also one of the dainties of Shabbos. And this chassid told them, when I left my house in the morning, my wife was making this delicious kugel. And just the aroma of this potato pastry was so enticing to me that all I could think about doing my prayers this morning was, in fact, that piece of kugel. So the Rebbe Shab obviously had picked up on the vibes, and after I finished the prayers, he walked up to me and said, you thought so much about that kugel, you were a piece of kugel yourself. So just to show you this, that any person who engages in certain behavior which is not ultimately becoming for that person as a human being, a being which is unique in this creation, blessed and anointed to have a divine image, well, certain statements are made by either the person themselves in a self-deprecating way, or observations are made by other people. And that was within the spirit, I think, that Alan and I were trying to present our ideas last week. Alan, any take on these ideas?
Well, I used to have the same problem with Krispy Kreme donuts, so I can identify with that man. Krispy Kreme donuts, by the way, are partially made with potato flour, which is why they're so light.
Wait a minute. I thought I saw a YouTube video a couple weeks ago where a Krispy Kreme donut with two legs and two arms was seen walking in the streets of Southern Florida. Was that you?
That was me.
Okay.
Well, it's a big hole in his head. Yes, that was it.
Well, I always knew you were a holy person. And by the way, we won't talk about my love for Chinese food. People have said to me, Don, you look like you really, they're not sure when they look at me if I look from side A of the menu or side B. With that being said, let's go right into the reading, Blessed Souls, of part one overview. Last time we didn't cover all the material, and I realized that basically, for those of you who are tuning in, that we are interested in presenting the material, not rushing to read a certain amount of pages. So although last time I think I joked with Alan, it would take us about 276 programs, hopefully it will be more, if need be, in order to communicate these ideas in a way that individuals should get an idea that Torah, and particularly the Noahide Commandments for all the blessed nations of the world, is something that is worth your blessed time to invest in. So here we go. Alan, starting from page 27, wrote the following. Let's back up a little bit. Likewise, in Hebrew, there is no word or even a concept that is analogous to the English word religion in the meaning of an organized belief system separate from laws and ethics. And I mentioned it last week, and I'll mention it again if you want to learn more about the word that closest resembles the word religion, although it doesn't really represent the definition of it. You would find it in the book of Deuteronomy, chapter 33, verse 2, where it talks about that the Israelites were given a fiery law unto his people. Now, as well, we also looked at the Webster Dictionary last week, as I mentioned, that my father had given to me from 1957, where there's no talk of law, but rather of faith and rather of rituals. However, reading further into the book, from the Torah viewpoint, there is no quote-unquote religious difference between the laws of a man selling a car and a Jew reciting the Shemona Esrei, which is an 18-prayer benediction that is recited Sunday through Fridays for the Jewish people, or observing the Shabbos. And that's quite true, because we're talking about, in order for how does a man sell a car properly if he's a Jewish car dealer, and also this would apply to Noahide as well, or how a Jew particularly would recite the 18-prayer benediction or observing the Shabbat, is not dependent on the religiosity of the person, but rather the knowledge of those laws, which serve as a divine structure dummied down to configure to human consciousness. Alan, your take on this, how there is a divine consciousness which is dummied down in not a negative way, but tailored to the needs of human intellect.
Well, the point is, the point I was making, it is supposed to be about observance. Do you observe the laws that were given? And this could apply, it applies both to prayer and to your everyday transactions. One of the things about prayer that so many non-Jews have, especially Christians and stuff, it prayer in the Jewish sense is something that fortifies your soul so you can go out and when you do interact with the rest of humanity, you do the right thing. It's sort of spiritually and mentally preparing you for what you're supposed to do.
Mm-hmm. I agree. It's an act of subdual, and that's why also we put those little black boxes for the majority of us on our left arm and in the center of our head above where our hairline recedes. Where our hairline ends, in order that we should subdue the intellect in our mind and the desires of our heart to a higher purpose, to recall the fact that the Most High took us out of Egypt, and we should seek to serve the Creator based on the knowledge that He has the power and the ability to sustain all the world, including our own little mini world. Now, going further into the book, as Rabbi Aden Steinsaltz explains, quote, the Torah makes no essential distinction between, the Torah makes no essential distinction between matters between a man and his creator and those between man and his fellow man. Because the structure of relationships between human beings is intimately connected to the relationship between man and his creator. And this is a teaching, blessed souls, which Rav Steinsaltz quotes from Bava Metzia, which is one of the Talmudic tractates which is involved in proper conduct between human being and human being. Like, for instance, the beginning of that Talmudic tractate talks about what happens if an article is found in the street and two Jewish people in particular reach for it and each one claims it is theirs, and there's a whole series of discussions of determining who has the right to this article, which one might claim it is his and the other one might claim it's his, or it might be neither's, and yet both are coming to possess it as an acquisition of something which was lost. And then there's a whole another set of laws. If you find a certain article in the street, what do you have an obligation to advertise? I found such and such an article. Now, this has nothing to do with being spiritual as much as hopefully a person's love and fear of God would be that one would want to do the right thing. And also, there was a teaching, and then we'll turn to Alan for some feedback. The Alter Rebbe, the first Lubavitcher, was asked, which commandment is more important, loving your fellow Jew as you love yourself, or loving the Creator? So he thought about it, he pondered upon the matter, and he said, loving your neighbor as yourself, or loving your fellow Jew as yourself, is more important. So the person asked him, how could that be? I mean, God. He said, try to understand this. If you're loving your neighbor as you love yourself, and you love your fellow Jew, or if you're a Noahide, you can certainly fulfill this commandment as well, and seek to receive the reward for doing so in a brotherly and sisterly hood fashion. You're loving what the Creator is creating. You're acknowledging the fact that you accept the fact that Joe Jones or Eric Weinstein is someone that Hashem, God, wanted on this earth. So loving them, which is not just giving them a hug and kiss, but respecting them, respecting their space. If you can help them, help them. If you're their work peer, work with them in a pleasant manner. If they're your employer, be respectful. If they're your underling, also do not seek to embarrass them. Try to treat them with respect and guide them in the way that make them a more effective employee. All these different things are a reflection of your acknowledgement of the Creator's wisdom for that person who is standing or sitting right next to you. So I think that's perhaps, Alan, this is how I read into the neshama, the soulfulness of that teaching that you quote from Rav Steinsaltz, is that everything is under the realm of the laws of the Torah in terms of reflecting how much do you respect the Creator and his decision to create this person who you have to engage in on a business level or a socialization level. Your take on these matters.
Well, I think it was Rav S.R. Hirsch who interpreted that verse as loving the well-being of your neighbor.
Mm-hmm.
So that in with what you're talking about, you know, you're wanting to respect his property, his well-being, his happiness. It's not just, yeah, like you said, not giving a hug and a kiss or something, but loving their well-being, hoping that what their, you know, their whole well-being, they're happy and not stressed out about anything.
True. I can just tell you, when I left my prayer congregation this morning, the famous Frankel Shul here in Crown Heights, that I was greeted by a good friend of mine, Alan, who was from Jamaica, and he was looking a little bit down because he had just got out of the hospital. He was there for, I'm assuming, for more than a week, and he had a stomach operation because he had some sort of blockage in his stomach, intestinal tract, that was preventing him from swallowing food. Oh, he could swallow the food, but then he would throw it up. So he lifted up his stomach, and I saw this momish, overwhelming scar running vertically up his stomach, and I wished him well, and I put my hand on his shoulder, and he thanked me. He put his hand on my heart, and this is what it is. You know, he's a very good man who's been through a lot. He was once shot, and he almost was left for dead, and he survived it, thank God. And he's another trauma in his life, not even being able to digest food. So, you know, I wish I could provide him, you know, to go to a professional nutritionist to help him to avoid these type of blockages. But at the very least, I walked away feeling that he walked away feeling hopefully that I cared and I wished him well. And I think he felt as if he can turn to me again. This is one just, you know, very, very brief example. I can't make this up as though it just happened this morning, which to me is part of the preparation of the show, to bring live instances of how individuals like Alan and myself, we're not living in ivory tower realms of philosophy. We're talking about taking teachings of Torah, lawful teachings of Torah, and how we can do it on the most simplest fashion. Don't look to upward mountains, blessed souls. Look to see what you can do on the most microcosmic level, but that energy of that microcosmic action or attitude can actually give a person a boost during the day. Alan, any take on this matter?
Well, that's one of the themes I have in the book is the theoretical and the practical. You really can't have one without the other.
Uh-huh.
You can't have the practical application of the laws unless you understand the theory behind it, and just knowing the theory doesn't do you any good if you don't go out and perform them.
True. In fact, there's a teaching, I believe, from the Talmudic literature, is it? That if a person... that if a person is engaging in the learning of Torah but not seeking to fulfill what is written, it would have been better if that person's, basically, I'll say it very black and white, it would be better if the person wasn't born. I mean, that seems like a very strict pronouncement. However, the whole idea is if we are accessing God's laws, God's teachings, and all the inspiration that can come, that can swell up in a person's heart and mind to learn these instructions, and no one's expected to fulfill everything at one moment. But again, piece by piece, just like you have piece by piece that food that you take into your body or that oxygen you're taking in, you just can't take in all of North America's supply of oxygen in one breath. It would blow you up. You would blow up like a blimp. Alan, your take on this, how people have to, it's important for human beings to realize when they learn the instructions of the Torah, and especially the Seven Commandments, that they shouldn't get overwhelmed, but rather take it as you take a piece of food, bite by bite, and to seek others to take counsel, like with someone like yourself, which they can access through Facebook or through your I think you have a blog site, which maybe you want to share with everyone as we're coming down to the close of our program today. Your take on these matters.
I think that okay, but also says a man whose wisdom exceeds his good deeds, his wisdom will not endure.
Mm-hmm.
You cannot do good deeds if you don't understand what they are. And if you have more wisdom than good deeds, what good does your wisdom do you?
True. And my concluding statement today deals with a very, very sharp statement by Rav Hirsch, who is quoted many, many times brilliantly by Alan in his book. First from Alan's writing, and then we'll quote from Rav Hirsch's teaching. This is why it is misleading to talk about Jewish religion. And I agree, it is very misleading. For the Torah encompasses the entirety of Jewish culture in both what we call the secular and religious spheres, and both words secular and religious are in quotation marks, and differentiating between the two projects a false dichotomy onto the Torah and puts limits on our understanding. And then Alan brilliantly pulls out a teaching from Hirsch's Collective Writings, Volume 1, pages 390 to 91, where he presents certainly a most radical cure, and I'm now quoting from the teaching of Rav Hirsch, perhaps the most radical cure in time of confusion and the loss of all values would be provisional, the closing of all synagogues or prayer congregations. Let such an idea not frighten the reader. The closing of all synagogues would not affect or alter the precepts of the divine law one iota. And closing of all synagogues through Jewish hands would constitute the loudest protest against the denial of the divine law in life and home. It would give the most drastic emphasis to the truth that divine Judaic teachings embraces and dominates the totality of Jewish life and does not find its fulfillment in the halls of prayer and worship. And this is an extremely radical statement. And if I didn't know Rav Hirsch had written that, I would think it was someone from the conservative or reform or reconstructionist movement within the Jewish people. However, I understand the spirit of the teaching, blessed souls, because Rabbi Dr. Eliezer Goldstock, who used to co-host a show with me to inform people about the need to become more sensitive to special individuals who the world calls mentally retarded or delayed, that most of our life is not spent in the prayer house. Most of our life is not spent in the congregations learning Torah. But all those things, as Alan mentioned at the beginning of today's program, is in order that we integrate that sense of humility and sense of purpose to hopefully uplift the society. And Alan, can you please make a concluding statement how the point of Noahites, Gentile people all around the world learning about their unadulterated heritage, which actually preceded the heritage of the Jewish people, learning the 700 commandments, is meant for implementation and not for, again, as we mentioned before, ivory tower philosophical conjecture?
Well, it's a lot of people look at the Noahide Law as a foundation for just individual religious belief, and it's not. Mm-hmm. That is the beginning of it, but the purpose of it is to go out into the world, as you said, and actually do what the Torah commands. As Rabbi Hillel said, what is hateful to yourself, do not do to another.
Mm-hmm.
This is the whole of the Torah, the rest is commentary, go study.
Mm-hmm. Beautiful. Thank you, Anna. As we now come to the conclusion of our program, again, I'd like to profusely, publicly thank you, Alan, for taking a bit of your most valuable time this morning to dialogue with myself, Don Zuzio Goodman, your local cyberspace Torah activist, who wants to remind everyone we're going to end the show again with our flagship ending artist, who's put out another song called Perfectly Imperfect, David Dome, will help us get back home to realize our Tzelem Elohim is no dream. Your divine image will help you get off in scrimmage. And just remember, blessed souls, you have got to be good. It might seem hard, and it seems hard to me at times as well, but you've got to be good, because Ateva Tov Lehetev, it's the nature of the good to do good, and that nature of that good is ultimately rooted in the goodness of the Creator. He didn't put 7 billion people in the world plus right now in order that so many should be starving, so many should be lacking, and if in the hands of a few insidious minds there should be some idea that there's not enough resources, because that is denying the divine hand that is actually causing this earth, which is just like a mustard seed compared to the rest of the universe, to twirl in the atmospheres and the spheres and the hemispheres of the Creator's creation, which arose up in His will. This is the way things should be. But for the rest of us, we remain perfectly imperfect, and hopefully we'll remain perfectly imperfect in the way of Ahav Echad, one love, Goral Echad, one destiny, Kolano, all of us, Bardachu Shalom, Bardachu Noam, in a peaceful and pleasant way, Laham Shik, to be continued, Bez Hashem Yisbrek, to be continued with the help of the Most High. Take care, everyone.
Why people would choose to hate, I will never know. A childhood trauma made a mark that will not go with you. Pretend you do not have it, it might just always show. And nobody is perfect, why feign to be? Perfectly imperfect brings the best out in me. Doesn't mean I don't stop fighting, but I can't win them all. The truth will keep me standing, and pride comes before a fall. Perfect imperfection, give me something I can use on the path to enlightenment. This time through news, I'm connecting to the fact I can't stand on my own, and I really need you like my back. Kill my demons, I need love to win the war. Turn these demons into angels, what else is love for? There's no point in holding grudges, they only kill the soul. In the end, there's only kindness. Kindness is my goal. When faced with silence or opinion, silence always wins the day, unless opinions are based on love. There's nothing much to say, and on this road to kindness, the road signs say it all. To be perfectly imperfect saves you crashing through a wall. Perfect imperfection, give me something I can use on this path to enlightenment. Through the news, I'm connecting to the fact that I can't stand on my own, and I really need you like my back needs a bone. I need love to kill my demons, I need love to win the war. Turn these demons into angels, what else is love for? There's no point in holding grudges, they only kill the soul. In the end there's only kindness, kindness is my goal. Perfect imperfection, give me something I can use on this path to enlightenment. This current through reviews, I'm connecting to the fact I can't stand on my own, and I really need you like a help desk needs a I can't stand on my own, and I really